Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice, a very special episode for you guys. This is going to be our very last episode of season 14. It's your last bonus episode where we get to have a little fun before we get into the serious work of season 15, which is going to premiere next Sunday. I'm joined today by friend of the show, my friend, and everybody's favorite profiler, Mr. Jim Clementi. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, Bob, how you doing? It's great to be here, as always. Yeah, you've always been such a good friend ever since I first met you, and it's always fun to come on your podcast and for you to come on mine. So this is a wonderful thing. And just before you even start, I understand some congratulations are in order.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, Well, I do want to make clear that what happened with Carrie Max Cook today. So Jim and I are recording this on Wednesday, and as the day that the news dropped, him getting fully exonerated really didn't have anything to do with us other than we covered his case. God, we're getting old, Jim. That was 8 years ago. We were working on his case. But yeah, he's been fully exonerated, declared actually innocent, finally, after a 40-plus year battle.
Well, listen, you may say that had nothing to do with it, but I mean, who knows? Getting it in the zeitgeist and putting all that information out there, hopefully that helped.
Yeah. Well, I mean, either way, it's always great to get a win. You know, working in wrongful conviction work, it's L after L after L, and you just keep fighting. And every once in a while you get a big W, and it makes you feel good to see somebody finally, especially Kerry. Kerry's such a good guy, and
yeah,
he's been fighting for, and he went through, so, you know, he was on. Are you familiar with Kerry's case?
Yeah. I mean, I was, I can't tell you right now the facts of it, but you go for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not going to go through all the facts because I don't even remember all of them, but he was in, you know, he was on death row for 20 plus years. He kept, I'm trying to, off the top of my head, his book is called Chasing Justice. It's a fabulous book. I read it years ago. But it goes through his story of being in prison for all those years, and he'd get his conviction vacated and they try him again and send him back to death row, and he'd get it vacated and they try him again and send him back to death row. And then finally he got out on, you know, a version kind of an Alford plea, and then has been fighting to prove his actual innocence ever since. And the good news is this happened in Texas, which in Texas, the people that are declared actually innocent, which is incredibly rare, are entitled to $80,000 a year for every year they were incarcerated from the state, plus I believe $40,000 a year for the rest of their life after that. So for the rest of Kerry's life should at least financially, he shouldn't have anything to worry about. Wow. It should be a couple of $1 million, I think, that the state owes him now.
Wow, that's crazy. That's really insane. But, you know, I'm glad he's out. It's just terrible that people have to deal with that kind of stuff. I mean, our system is set up so that better than 1,000 guilty men go free than one innocent man get incarcerated.
Right. Yeah.
That's so, Wow. I mean, I don't understand how this kind of stuff happens other than biases, you know?
Yeah. Well, it kind of came on the heels too for us. This on Sunday's episode, we covered the Marcellus Williams case. And I'm sure you've seen that all over social media and the news that, you know, with all the evidence proving his innocence, the new governor in Missouri just lifted the stay from the previous governor, and they scheduled an execution date for him for September. So we literally just 3 days ago put out an episode trying to get people to go to the Innocence Project page to sign that petition. And then we get some good news from Kerry afterwards. Hopefully we have some good news with Marcellus Williams case coming soon.
Well, hopefully that'll get straightened out. So how you been, Bob?
Oh, busy, good. When we chatted the other day, I told you I'd been teaching. What happened was last year, our local high school here was starting a broadcasting class and asked me to be on the advisory board. And then I was on it, and I had all sorts of things that was telling them that we need to do with our youth and teaching these kids and giving them other options besides college. And I had so many strong opinions that they grabbed me afterwards and said, "How about you teach the class?" And I kind of boxed myself into a corner. So I've been doing it. So it's been
great. They're lucky kids.
Well, two of them are working for me now. So it worked out great for me. I've got my new, I told her I don't know what to call her. She's not right. Assistant seems lower than what she is, because she's really a researcher and writer is what she's doing for me. But the Erica is doing all that work, helping prepare the new season. And then another student of mine, Caden, is doing all the music for the season. So it's been really cool to take the youth that have all this talent and put them to work doing real life work, trying to make a difference.
That's great. That's really great.
So how about you? What do you guys have? You guys had some changes over at Real Crime Profile.
Well, that's what it appears. Yes. When we hit episode 500, which was a pretty big milestone for us, you know, one episode a week for over 8 years, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's pretty pretty amazing. And when we did that, we basically, I guess Lisa was going through some stuff. You know, she was really busy with her casting work and family commitments, and Laura had a lot of travel, and so they basically said, you know, it looks like we're gonna step away. And so I thought, you know, look, this is too important a project to just abandon, and you know, even to just take a hiatus, because a lot of podcasts don't come back from hiatus,
right?
You know. And so I've been keeping going, and Lisa came on for some of the episodes. She can't do it all the time. And I brought on Kathy Canning, who was a wonderful profiler that worked with me in the FBI, and she's an amazing FBI agent. She rose up to the level of legal attaché to Soviet Georgia, and that's a really important job. In other words, anything that the FBI does in many countries outside of the United States is done through our legal attaché office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very difficult position to rise up to, especially in a very critical and important station like Soviet Georgia. I think she covered Azerbaijan, I can't say it, and Soviet Georgia and the Ukraine. And so obviously there's a lot happening there, and any crimes that happen related to U.S. citizens there, or any crimes that happen from there to the U.S., I mean, those are all dealt with through the legal attaché office, as well as any kind of foreign police cooperation work is done through there. So it's really important work, and it's sort of a frontline position. I mean, almost literally in that case. And Kathy rose to the level of doing that, but she did a lot of great research while she was in the BAU with me. She did research on false allegations of child abduction. She did research on basically patricide, parents who kill their children.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredibly important because it helped us in so many cases. In fact, on one case where we worked together, Kathy and I were sitting in the briefing. It was in like Gary, Indiana, and we're sitting in the briefing, and we found out that, well, they announced that the babysitter of this little 2-year-old girl who's now missing volunteered to potty train this girl. And Kathy and I look at each other because Kathy's research showed that in 17% of the false allegations of child abduction, where the caregiver actually killed the child and alleged that they were abducted, in 17% of those cases, it was a potty training incident gone awry. The parent or guardian got so upset and basically took it out on the kid, and the kid ended up dead. And they claimed that the kid was abducted. So we looked at each other. I mean, this was a couple of minutes into the briefing, and we both then had in the back of our mind, we really need to look at this babysitter, you know, who was a cousin of the mother of this child. And when we did start looking at her, we found that she was a predisposed female offender. And this is a very rare type of offender. Although I think I saw in the course of my career in the FBI, I think a total of 5 of those offenders out of the thousands that we encountered. So this is a very, very difficult kind of case to prove, because everybody thinks it's some man who did bad things to the kid. And in this case, and in several cases like it, it was a woman who did the terrible things to the child and ended up killing the child.
Yeah, and I take it that is what happened in that case?
That is what happened in that case, and we were able to prove it. They were pointing at her boyfriend, who was a drug dealer, and they were trying to get him to flip on her. I mean, excuse me, her to flip on him. And I wrote an episode of Criminal Minds called Gabby about this. And it turned out that exactly what happened was that this woman had killed the child, and she basically got the boyfriend to help her get rid of the body. But it was a very, very sad case. However, it was a case that really reinforces what profiling does, which is you look at the behavior and you can see these patterns, and people reveal what their true intentions are based on their behavior. Now, a lot of times the words they say are not revealing, but their behavior certainly is.
Well, that's amazing. And actually Gary, Indiana is like 40 minutes from where I'm sitting right now. It's right in my neck of the woods. Yeah. Around the corner. And when you were describing that case, I was sitting there thinking, why do I know that case? But I just, when you said it, I realized because I watched that episode of Criminal Minds.
There you go.
I was like, wait a minute, this sounds familiar. This has happened before. On TV.
Definitely.
So Real Crime Profile is living on. Now, is she going to be a regular staple on the show with you? Or
I believe so. She's a professor at the University of Wilmington, I guess. University of South Carolina at Wilmington. Am I right? South Carolina rather than North Carolina? I'm not sure. But
one of the Carolinas.
Yeah. She's at the university there in Wilmington. And so she has times when she's a little busy, but we're gonna try to make her a permanent host on the show. And that'll be great because, like I said, we worked together for 10 years in the BAU. We worked a lot of the same cases together, and we have very similar interests in finding justice and also in trying to help protect children and people who are victimized by crime. So it's a great fit, and you know, she fits right in with the Real Crime Profile brand, and so I'd be happy to have her full time. Yeah,
that's great. And it's awesome that the show's not gonna die with the, you know, your other two hosts being gone, because you guys do such important work in shining a light on all these cases.
Yeah, well, we have gotten thousands of very encouraging communications on the various social media and emails and Facebook or Meta. So many people have listened to our episodes over the years and said, look, you made me realize the situation I was in was bad. You helped me find a way to get out safely. You helped my brother come forward. You helped in so many ways. So we're really happy to keep that tradition going. It's just, it's a really important thing.
Well, it is very educational. I've even found myself and with friends that have been in kind of relationships where, you know, they'll be talking to me about a situation that's going on in new relationships. And just from a lot of the stuff I've learned just from you, just from working with you and talking with you, but even from the podcast where you're like, oh, because, you know, especially a lot of the stuff you guys have talked about, like with you and Laura, both with like coercive control and things like that. I'm like, if he's doing that this early in the relationship, you need to watch out for this, watch out for this, watch out for this. And I think it really makes a difference.
It's happened in my family, you know, in my extended family, you know, where I've seen things that really bothered me. And I've spoken to my relative about it and made sure that they were aware, and also kept in mind that, you know, relationships are very complicated, and we're going to talk about Baby Reindeer later, but that series really gets into the complication and the multiple layers of different types of relationships, good and bad. Anyway, the fact that relationships are so complicated, you have to let the person that's in them make decisions along the way. You can't just say, okay, this is the way it's going to be, because that person is the one immersed in it, not right. You. And so you have to help them find the way to do it that helps them the most in terms of their emotional and psychological well-being, as well as their physical well-being. So you have to take all that into account. You can't just say, this is what you do in every one of these situations at this point. You know, you literally have to be very careful about that. And I get questions all the time from people who are in tight situations and various different kinds. And I have to be very careful to be responsible about how I reply, because, you know, if it's a child and they're at risk, absolutely. You end that, whatever that risky situation is. There's no question about it. But if it's an adult, that adult has to take responsibility for their actions, and they have to be safe in that process. So it's something they should be very careful about.
Yeah. And I think it's really valuable to even, when you tell the stories, the situations where those relationships do end up going bad, and you kind of break down the signs along the way, I think that's, to me, it's always been, it's helpful to say, okay, well, we've seen how things go bad in situations like this before. So this thing doesn't necessarily mean this, but be watching out for this. Right, be watching out for them to start isolating you from your support group, and be careful about the, you know, looking out for these, the love bombing that's going to come after it.
The gaslighting, the incredibly manipulative kind of withholding and giving at the same time, you know, there's all sorts of things that go on. But when you're in it and you know it doesn't feel right, just knowing for a fact that could lead to something very bad can help you make a decision to safely get away.
Yeah. So go ahead.
And I know we've said this a number of times, Laura and I have both said it on Real Crime Profile. Laura's statistics are that if a spouse or a loved one puts their hands around the neck of their spouse or the partner, right? That is an extremely risky sign. In other words, that will only get worse, and it could lead to death. So that is an incredibly important thing to, you know, hang the hugest red flag on. You know, people say, oh, well, he only did it once. Oh, well, you know, he didn't really mean it. Oh, well, he was drunk. That putting the hands around the neck of somebody, you know, pushing them up against a wall, whatever it is, that is extremely risky.
Yeah. And I think it's good. So everybody, I think, should immerse themselves in a lot of those Real Crime Profile episodes to hear, because obviously it's a much bigger, deeper, longer discussion about all these different signs, but they do make a difference. I mean, there's like, I've seen it firsthand with several people that I just recently had somebody, and they're still going through it. And like you said, letting them go through it. But she was, a friend of mine was dating someone who kind of wouldn't take no for an answer with anything that she tried to put her foot down. And then every time, happened to be sitting in front of me one time when they were texting. She's like, no, I don't want to do that. No, we're not going to do that. No, I don't think we should do that. And then And then immediately the phone call come and got her on the phone, and then
escalation. Yeah.
Yep. And then through the phone call, you know, convinced her to do the thing that she didn't want to do over the phone. And it happened right in front of me. And I was like, what just happened? You just told me all these things. And then you just completely, and she was like, I don't know. He always, if he can get me on the phone, that's why I text him. Cause if he can get me on the phone, then he can manipulate me. And like, you need to be careful about that.
Yeah. Relationships are not manipulative.
Right.
They're working together,
mm-hmm.
not one person manipulating the other. So, yeah, when you see that kind of manipulation, it's also a red flag. I mean, I'm not saying, and this is one of the biggest problems with when people have a little bit of information, sometimes they apply it across the board. And what you have to do is actually be very extremely careful. Laura created the DASH risk assessment, mm-hmm. DASH, and that is for people to use themselves, you know, to look at their own relationships or your friend's relationship with that person to show certain risk signs and dangers. It's also a teaching tool for law enforcement, and law enforcement should be using it as they assess a situation when they come upon it in the course of their work.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Message and data rates may apply, or consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
How often do you guys, just from talking to you, and we're chatting, we're talking about some listener that's like written in or whatever that you talk to. How often do people with real life issues that they have real concerns write into the show, and that you or Laura engage with them and try to actually help work them through the problems that they're going through?
Yeah, it happens very often. I won't say every week, but you know, there are people that reach out to us, I'd say on a monthly basis, and this has been going on for, you know, nine plus years now. I can't even count, mm-hmm. right? But it's been going on for a very long time, and we've attempted, and sometimes we have to, you know, refer them to hotlines and things like that, and local law enforcement, local charities and so forth, because, you know, it's very difficult to get involved with hundreds of cases at the same time. You know, we right. have people all over the world that listen to our show, and it's really important that laws differ in different jurisdictions from state to state, as well as from country to country. So it's important that they get the best counseling from somebody in their jurisdiction.
Yeah. And it just, to me, it's just always one of the things that I've always admired about you guys is I don't think there's a lot of podcast public figures or whatever you want to call them that have such a heart for the work they're doing that they will engage and try to help people when they
need help. Of course, I mean, our purpose is to help people and,
right.
you know, to give victims their voice back. And, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, you happen to be one of the professionals who does this. There are a lot of people who entertain with podcasts mm-hmm. and, you know, they have, you know, they're their favorite crime or their crime and alcohol or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and they have their place in true crime, but that's not what we do. I mean, we are actually performing a service, analyzing cases, analyzing shows, because sometimes those can be so manipulative as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we started off with Making a Murderer, and you know, everybody thought Steve Avery was just this hapless, innocent man who did nothing wrong based on that show. Well, the fact is that that's just not the case. He was a very violent offender. He was a domestic abuser, an extreme domestic abuser, and he had serious fantasies about hurting women. And, you know, and it really appears like he lived out that fantasy and killed, and now I can't remember
Teresa
her name,
Halbach.
Teresa Halbach. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, just because the law enforcement may not have been perfect, doesn't mean that he's a good person.
Right.
And so we wanted to make sure that people understood that. And it wasn't until this past year when they aired a follow-up to Making a Murderer, which showed how manipulative the producers were in that first series. They had cut off 911 calls. They had cut off police radio calls. They only used different excerpts. Some of the witnesses that they showed on the stand were, and one of them was an FBI agent that I know.
Uh-huh.
They show the question. They show him listening to a question, and then they showed him answering a different question. The answer that he gave to the question they asked, they didn't like. So they just changed his answer. Things yeah. like that are an abomination. That is not a documentary. That is a manipulative piece. And that's what happened in that series. So you have to be careful. So one of the things that we've taken on is, if there are cases that are being depicted, real cases that are being depicted in the media, we will analyze those documentaries or those series and make sure that we can verify what happened. And if not, if that's not what really happened, then we'll have the people on to talk about it so that we can get the real story out. There was a series, and now I can't, it's like, what was it, In Plain Sight? Abducted in Plain Sight or something like that. Do you remember that series?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and this series, when I first heard about it, a friend of mine told me, you are going, when you watch this, you are going to want to throw your television out the window. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I wanted to throw my television out the window. I could not believe. In fact, I thought, oh, this must be a mockumentary. In other words, it wasn't a real documentary. It was, they were making fun of a situation. Well, as it turns out, that's not the case. This really happened. And the people that were being interviewed were real people. But it was so disturbing because the gullible nature of the parents who basically put their daughter in such a profoundly risky and abusive situation. And then you find out the levels of manipulation of this offender and what this daughter had to go through. Well, we had the daughter, the grown-up daughter, on RCP so that she could explain the situation. And we talked about it and we supported her and we told her it wasn't her fault at all. I mean, she was a child. She was manipulated both by this offender and by her parents. And it was an incredible breakdown of the family that led to a situation in which she was badly abused. And it should never have happened. But I thought it was really important for people to know and to understand, because they were blaming everybody, including the victim.
Right.
And that's just not right.
Well, and you guys not only give victims a voice, but also give them an unedited opportunity to speak. And that's what a lot of people don't realize when those documents, like you were talking about cutting and pasting stuff from, you know, and from us making our documentary we made together, you record, an 8-hour interview and 42 seconds of it ends up in the in the episode just because of the way editing works. But yeah, the nice thing about this medium is you're able to have her on and let her tell her story uninterrupted.
Right. And we did the same with the victims, which I believe the series is called American Nightmare. Their book is called Victim F.
Oh, yeah.
And what a horrific set of events that they were forced to go through. I mean, first by the offender.
Right.
But then by the police department and then by the community. Mm-hmm. They were totally vilified. They were made to be, you know, to look like they were the bad people, and they had gone through literal hell. Now, luckily, this story has a really happy ending. You know, they're fine now. However, we needed to give them an opportunity to speak. And it was, a good year or two before the series came out. But we had read the book and we reached out and we made sure that we gave them an opportunity to tell their story in a way that wasn't, filtered by a production company, by a network, you know?
Yeah. Have you guys done any work yet with, or do you have any intention to, if you haven't, with the Natalia Grace story?
We have talked about it. Yeah. We've gone through that series and, it's very complicated.
Yeah.
You know, it's extremely complicated. And, you know, we kind of go back and forth over the information that's out there and the information that we could glean from our sources behind the scenes. It doesn't look like anybody's perfect.
Right.
That's in that whole scenario. But it also looks like, you know, there is a, you know, just a high probability that there was some serious manipulation going on by Natalia.
Yeah, that would the last installment, the last season or whatever they call it of that of that story was just, that's one of those I believe Becky said we done. She said, "Ooh, is Jim going to do something on this one? Like, I want to know what the hell is going on here."
Yeah, we did. You could find those episodes on Real Crime Profile.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you guys just finished up recently a series on, we alluded to it, the Baby Reindeer series, which is, I almost called it a docu-series, but it wasn't a docu-series. It was scripted, no. But it was based on a true story. And that one was, when I watched that, it was just, I couldn't even wrap my brain around everything that was going on there. And there was, and I thought at the time that, you know, with the work that you've done and Laura's done with stalking behaviors and things like that, like there's, I'd love a breakdown of what was going on there, what people should take away from it.
Well, we covered it in, I think we've done four or five episodes on it. And, you know, Lisa and Kathy Canning and I did a few episodes. And then I brought on a friend who's also sort of a solo performer who's, you know, went through a similar background as Richard Gadd, the writer and the star of this series, Baby Reindeer. And so we've done a fair amount of analysis on it. The fact is that I consider it one of the most groundbreaking pieces of art that has occurred in my lifetime, because not only do they deal with, I'd say, three seriously major topics, they deal with the true complexity of human relationship. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's incredible, because generally in, you know, creative works, you know, you'll see there's a very clear line between black and white, good and bad, right and wrong. And there's never this sort of realism. And that I just kept saying, this is so real. This is so real because people respond in different ways based on what their desires are and what their relationship is with the person. And so in this case, you know, it starts out as a sad soul coming into a bar, and she's on the verge of tears, and he feels bad for her, so he gives her a free cup of tea, and she takes it as an invite to come back every day, and basically becomes a stalker. And although he does like the attention he gets from her, it eventually gets to be just way over the top and vicious and brings in her family and all brings in his family and and attacks his relationship and so forth. So it deals with that. But then this stalker seems to have this incredible insight into him and his behavior and why he acts the way he does. And she makes a statement that just floors him, because he didn't think that anybody knew what had happened to him. And then he goes back in the series and sort of explores what had happened to him. And now we get into male sexual victimization. And, you know, this is something that is very difficult for people to watch and talk about in this country and in this world. And yet, this has become one of the most talked about series in the history of Netflix. And that isn't as far as it goes. It continues to go, and it talks about the complexity of that relationship, as well as sort of the fallout from it, and his questioning his sexuality, and then his relationship with a trans woman, and then his realization that this is a very fulfilling relationship with him, but he doesn't want to admit it in public. And so this, again, it's another level of complexity there. Like, he ruins that relationship, even though he thought it was good for him. He ruins it because he was afraid to admit it to the public. And then what does he do? He admits it to the public. He thinks he's admitting it just to a small crowd of people in a comedy competition, but somebody tapes it. Somebody sends it out over the internet. And now it's viral. It's a worldwide sensation. His sort of falling apart and you know, revealing what had happened to him on all these different levels. And it becomes sort of his most shining moment. And then when he, you know, he realizes that because it's out in the world, he's going to have to talk to his parents about it. And his father is a very, you know, stern, quiet man. And his mother is very caring. But, you know, he goes to them and he sits there and he talks to them. And he says, "I'm just so afraid to say it because I'm afraid you're not going to love me anymore." And, you know, he tells them, and his father literally with one line just blows everything up. I mean, he just says, "I grew up in Catholic school. Enough said." And then he hugs his son, you know, and he embraces him. He brings him and he makes him feel like he's still part of the family. And that was a big deal. And so there were so many just incredible different topics that are all merged into one. Generally, they tell you, well, it has to be either this or that or the other thing. You can't talk about all these different things in one series. Well, he did it. He managed to do it. It resonated with so many people around the world that it became a number one hit.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It was one of those things where I watched it and it was so complex, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was that was going on. But it is that it's the real relationship, because you don't see that as particularly in a scripted show, because usually there is a very clear protagonist and a very clear antagonist. And in this case, there were times when you feel for the guy and you love him, and then you hate him, and then the reactions from people that have heard, you know, when I've talked to people who have watched it, they span so far. The people that think it was exploitive, my take on it was just like because I didn't know when I watched it that it was a true story.
I didn't know
story,
about it either.
Yeah. That it was a true story, and it was his story. The actor, you know, the
oh, you didn't? Okay,
no, I just thought we're just watching this based on a true story thing. And so to me, it was like, how incredible that he made himself so vulnerable to show the dark side of it, to show that because how easy would it have been to tell that story in a way where he's just the victim and he's just the good guy.
Right.
But to become so vulnerable, everything from the sexual assault that he experienced to his feelings towards his stalker and how he played a role in that stalking continuing. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah. And the word complexity doesn't seem to really cover it, but just the nuances of, you know, all right, I know this is bad for me. Why am I doing it? All right, I know that she's being misled, but why am I doing it? Because I like this. I need this. Why do I need this? Well, what happened to me? You know, and it just kept sort of unraveling. It's just layer after layer after layer of real human emotion. So I had told a bunch of my friends after I watched it that they should watch it. And some of them said, well, I got to the second episode and I just can't watch this anymore. And I said, well, you're doing yourself a disservice mm-hmm. if you stop at the second episode. Just continue and take your time. Do it in 5 minutes. I don't care what you do, but just watch it. And I have been thanked over and over again for making them do that because they didn't realize how it would all come. And then the very end, you know, where he has sort of seemingly lost everything and lost all hope and just doesn't know what's going to happen. He ends up in a bar and he realizes he doesn't have his wallet and the bartender does a kindness to him and buys him a drink, you know, and it's like full friggin' circle, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and you just have to say, look, this is probably the most realistic depiction I've ever seen in a scripted drama, right? Mm-hmm. It's probably the most realistic description I've ever seen of real life and real relationships. Yes, it does touch on some of the most horrible things that humans do to one another, right? But it shows the life that surrounds that. And you're right about him being vulnerable. I mean, when he was on that stage and you realize he's about to sit down and tell all these people what he's done and what he's gone through, and you just like cringe. You're like, oh no, don't. Oh my God, his three best buddies are in the front row and he's going to be so embarrassed.
Yeah.
But he does it and they don't take advantage of him and they understand. And that's, you know, sort of that, you know, the sort of macho friend relationships, it shows a little bit deeper understanding of what humans go through. You know, it's not just being a tough guy and, you know, getting drunk and laughing things off and watching sports. They really cared about him. It touched them. Relationship with his father and mother, the relationship with his girlfriend, the relationship with this stalker. The fact that he went back to the guy who sexually assaulted him or raped him. And you think, all right, he's going to really throw the book at this guy. He's going to, you know, do something. And instead, he ends up just saying, okay, yeah, we'll keep working on my stuff. Because he wanted that to be true. But when he leaves, he just kind of leans against a wall and falls apart, you know, because that's what we do sometimes. You know, we don't want the confrontation. We don't want to face the bad things that happen to us. So we hide from them and it still hurts us. You know, it's still the same trauma. So just revealing all of that and being so honest about that, even if he was creative in terms of some of the things that the stalker did or had been accused of before or whatever, I will say, I don't know if you saw the Piers Morgan interview of the woman who came forward and said she was the stalker from...
I didn't, Baby but Rain. I was going to ask you about that. I take it you have.
Oh, yeah, I have. And what's amazing about it is, and it just continues to unravel because she has now sued Netflix for $160 million or something like that. She sued Piers Morgan for $1 million right after the show. Look, when he announced that he's going to have her on, I was like, I tweeted him. I said, dude, I hope you don't find out the hard way why it is a really bad idea to have her on your show. I mean, you know, if she is the stalker, then, you know, you might find out the hard way that that's not the best thing to do. Anyway,
so she went on his show for that interview and then sued him
for $1 million
for her interview.
Because she said he depicted her in a bad light. But what it was he challenged her when she came out first, and she was very, you know, she tried to be very sophisticated and lighthearted about it and so forth. But she ends up revealing every trait that he says in that series that he shows. I mean, it's unbelievable. She will say things like, he said, did you have a relationship with Richard Gadd? She said, no, I don't date little boys, especially those who don't have a real job. You know, I'm a lawyer, you know. So what she did was she tried to put him down mm-hmm. and raise herself up. What she's showing is that she's a vulnerable narcissist, somebody who has to prove to other people. We might know somebody who's running for president who does that all the time. Basically, you know, has to tell people how great he is. People always say how great I did. People always say I aced this test. You know, she says, yeah, of course, I have a photographic memory. She's like, you know, she has to put herself all the way to the top. But moments before that, she was telling us how she didn't remember how many times she sent him emails or how many times she said, I did not communicate with him at all. And then she says later, well, we were all friends. She said, if he said something about putting up hanging my curtains, that was just a bad joke, you know. And then later she said, well, he made a serious sexual advance to me. Well, how did she do that? Piers asked. Well, he said he wanted to hang my curtain. And so I shut him down. I shut him down completely. And Piers said, moments ago, you said it was just a lighthearted joke. Now you're old friends and you're shutting him down because he tried to make a sexual, you know, she had to back off. That's why she's suing him, because he held her to task. But these kind of people who have that kind of stalker mentality, you know, may have a mental disorder that's causing it. And that isn't just going to go away just because she's on TV. And so she ends up revealing a number of very negative personality traits in that interview. While she's denying anything, she ends up admitting a bunch of it. And maybe I did write him a few texts, or maybe I did write him a few emails, or after she had said, I had no communications, I did not send anything to him, I don't believe.
You had said when you were bringing it up that the woman who claimed to be the stalker, is there some question about that, whether it's actually her or not?
No, I don't think there's any question, but she's the one. Netflix and Gadd did not identify her. So she came forward. Now, they said there's some of the, you know, viewers were trying to figure out who she was and so forth. And so anyway, she did come forward on her own and she said, I am the person it was based on. And yes, I did have a little stuffed baby reindeer when I was a kid. So she identifies as that person. But, you know, here's the problem. You say you're this person, but you're saying that it's defaming you, but nobody knew who you were until you stepped forward.
Right.
So until she made herself public, nobody knew that she was the model for this character. And you know, you've written stuff, right? You know that when you write, you can't put in, look, he's talking about 3 years of his life. You can't put that in 5-6 hours of television.
Right.
You have to summarize. You have to create, you know, convoluted characters, you know, compound characters and so forth. You have to compress time, and you have to do, you know, to make the story enjoyable and watchable for people, you create some drama that may or may not be there. So it's understandable. I think the only thing, you know, at the beginning of the series, it says this is a true story. So I don't know. That's the only thing that maybe, you know, it is true in many of its aspects, but it isn't 100% true. It's not just a recounting. It is a dramatic presentation, and it's based on 10 years of him doing these, you know, one man play basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's had two different shows based on his life, one man plays, and he kind of blended them together and added some of his comedy, and he created Baby Reindeer.
Well, it was an incredible series, and in this 15, 20 minutes that we talked about it doesn't do it justice. You need to go back and listen to the, you said you guys have 5 episodes now on the series?
A Real Crime Profile. Yeah.
Did you have anybody from the case or that actually came on?
We reached out to them and we got the most, polite no from Richard Gadd's people. We were incredibly indeed happy to have received your request. However, at the present moment, because of his schedule, we'd have to decline politely, things like that.
Yeah.
So, but like I said, I had Marty Moran on, who is a Broadway actor and writer, and we talked pretty extensively about it this week and last. So it's something that I would encourage everybody to watch. It's just a profoundly moving piece, and it does engender a lot of discussion, a lot of it. And another thing I wanted to talk to you about, Bob, is I just dropped Bluebeard, which was my first radio play on Audible. And it is a 9-part series starring Joseph Fiennes and Karen David and Adrian Pashdar and Holt McElhaney. And they're just an amazing cast. It's an audio play. They act it out and we have the sound effects. It's not just an audio book where somebody's reading a book. It's actually the actors telling the story of the first serial killer in Los Angeles. And it's sort of like done in two parallel timelines. One is this woman, Catherine Wambacher, meeting this guy who sweeps her off her feet and she marries him and she moves to Hollywood with him from the state of Washington, and her relationship is one thread. And then the other side is this interrogation of this serial killer by the district attorney. And as the reveals are made in the real world and in this interrogation, they eventually sort of blend and the timelines join. And it's an amazing thing because this woman who had the gall in 1920 to question her husband and go to a lawyer who rejected her and go to a private investigator who finally agreed to help her out. She thought she was going to try to prove that he was cheating on her. But did you know that in 1920, that a woman could not obtain a divorce unless she could prove infidelity and that her husband was committing a crime? If there was no crime, a woman could not be granted a divorce. A husband could be granted a divorce because he doesn't like the way she looks, but a wife could not. They could not have their own bank accounts. They could not have their own. They never got the ability to, women didn't get the ability to have credit cards in their own names until, like, I think 1976. So anyway, she's fighting an uphill battle. Not only does she find out that he's cheating on her, she finds out that he's married to 4 different women in LA alone at the same time, and all these other women up and down the coast, as well as he's robbing banks and he's killing his wife. So he killed as many as 16 of his wives. He was convicted of 10 murders. They haven't found the other 6 bodies. And, it was just a crazy true story.
Wow. And that's called Bluebeard?
Bluebeard, yes, because it's based on the name is sort of the first serial killer moniker that was given by the LA Times, which is, Bluebeard. Bluebeard is a fairy tale where a baron, kept killing his wives and, he'd marry these women and he had them all hanging from meat hooks in the basement, but that's the fairy tale. I don't know why we say these horrible things to our kids. I don't know. All fairy tales are horrible, I think. Yeah. But anyway, it's the Bluebeard fairy tale. So his beard was so black it shimmered blue. That's how he got that name.
Oh, that's great. Well, I know where my next Audible listen is going to be. I just finished my recent book. Last thing I want to leave you with, if you're open to it, Susan in our live chat said she wanted to know, is Jim willing to share a little bit about your ongoing medical struggles due to 9/11? She's glad to hear you're recovering well from the most recent round of treatment.
Yeah, I suppose, I had to have a section of my lung removed because I had a tumor, and luckily we found it early, and they believe that they got everything, and I'll go through scans every 6 months, you know, to make sure everything's cool, but recovering well, and just trying to build my wind back up a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm doing really well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, appreciate that. And I'll tell you on a personal note, that was an exciting tear-filled day for me when your brother, I knew when you were going to the hospital and was talking to Jim's brother while he was in there, and we were worried it was more than what it was. So that was
right.
I was sitting right out there when Tim told me that they got it and he's going to be okay. Everything's going to be all right. So I certainly was glad to hear
that you'd be recovering. As far as they could tell, it originated from things that I breathed in on 9/11. And, you know, it just, like I have said a number of times, I'm one of the lucky ones that's still around because a number of my colleagues are not. You know, we lost a number of FBI agents and firemen and policemen, different cancers, you know, from just breathing in that horrible stuff.
Well, we're lucky enough to still have you around to keep doing Real Crime Profile and keep helping people out.
I'm still also doing Best Case, Worst Case with Francie Hake. It's my other podcast where we with Best Case, Worst Case, we interview cops and related professionals from the justice system about the best and worst cases of their career. But we also talk about sort of emerging criminal justice type topics. We do a thing called worst case scenario when something really bad happens in the news, and it's something that we've been doing a lot of because there's been a lot of bad things going on. But we, Francie and I, try to give our different perspectives on different emerging cases and criminal justice issues. So I hope you can listen to that as well.
Yeah. And if you look way back in Best Case, Worst Case, I was even on there for a couple of episodes.
Absolutely.
Way back.
Yeah.
You know what?
And Real Crime Profile. You were our first interview on Real Crime Profile,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I got to sit in the room when you guys recorded episode one. I was sitting in your basement, in your old house.
In my studio. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, I just think this is because I'd listen to Best Case, Worst Case all the time. And I think a wonderful discussion where you guys can really argue it out, you and Francie, would be if you guys cover the Marcellus Willis case and that execute, because you guys have opposing views on the death penalty in general.
We do.
Yeah, that would be a real good
one. Okay, I'm writing it down right now. I'm writing it down. I'm going to ask Francie if we can do it.
Yeah, because I don't know how familiar you are with it, but it's a crazy situation where the current prosecutor, the DA, has filed a motion to vacate the conviction. Meanwhile, he can't get a hearing on that, and the Attorney General's office is pushing the Supreme Court, who is filing has scheduled an execution date, while the actual prosecutor is saying there's no case. It's a wild one.
That should not happen. Yeah, you know, this is one of the typical things that really makes me hate the death penalty. There's a point at which absolute innocent, actual innocence, is not an issue. In other words, you can prove that the person didn't commit the crime. They won't give you a hearing unless there is a technical, legal reason why they didn't get, quote, a fair trial. Fair trial is not a perfect trial. And
right.
So there are people who sit in judgment and say that, well, even though he was convicted of a crime he didn't commit, got a fair trial, so let's kill him. I just, that's the best argument I can even think of for not having a death penalty.
To me, I always say, when we have a criminal justice system that we, as a society, at least in the circles we run in, have realized is fallible. It is capable of making mistakes. If you're in a system that you know is capable of making a mistake, then the punishment should never be something that you can't take back.
Exactly. It's a very simple argument, Bob. And You and I are on exactly the same side of it.
Right. So you can go duke it out with Francie over that one.
All right. All right. Maybe I could, if I could ask you to come on with me and help, that might be helpful.
Yeah. We can sneak attack her from both sides.
There you go.
Yeah.
I won't tell her you're coming.
Right.
Okay, great. All right.
With that being said, I gotta run to the courthouse and go pick up some documents for my next case. But
well, good luck on your next case. I can't wait to hear all about it.
I appreciate that, and I know you're
great
super busy.
You
got all this stuff. It's always good to see you. And so till we speak, in the meantime, guys, go check out Real Crime Profile on Baby Reindeer. Check out Best Case, Worst Case. Check out Bluebeard, which is what I'm probably gonna start listening to on my way to the courthouse on Audible.
Well, thank you. I would really appreciate your feedback on it.
All right. You got it.
All right.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Love you, man.
Take care. I love you too, Bob.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kaywood Yomnick, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod, and I can be found on social media @BobRuffTruth. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch, but as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.